Mr. Jules, when we met in 2007, what was actually happening back then? I remember that you were recommended to me because you gave a talk at a games conference, wasn't that? So what was that, and what was actually happening in 2006, 2007 when ARS actually started? What was going on?
So yeah, to give anyone that's not aware of what the hell it is I do and why I'm up here, a bit of my background. So in 2004, I started a site called Slash Dong. It was a takeoff on Slash Dot, except Dong, because I am really creative like that. And it's a site about sex and technology, mainly open source sex and technology, which was not really a thing that existed either in the mainstream or much of the underground. And I was originally using it just to look at, like, what has sex brought to engineering? What can engineering bring to sex? And it has morphed definitions of why I do this and what it's here for multiple times over the years to where now Slashdong is more just my notebook on what's going on, what I think about it, comparisons to, like, basically a critical view on internet butt plugs. And I use internet butt plugs because that's, or just the term butt plugs in general, because everyone has a butt. I have not found a buttless gender yet. I mean, I'm sure someone's going to create one. Yeah, so anyways, 2006, we were still just, like, I was just still kind of ramping up, and at that point, there was, we were still kind of in the virtual world heyday at that point. Second Life was still huge. Sociolotron was actually, that was kind of when it hit its peak too. And we were also seeing things like Red Light Center and other adult worlds that were graphical worlds that were coming out. I mean, there's been text adult worlds since the late 80s, but
Everyone was thinking at that time that Second Life, that's the future, that's where it's going actually, but it didn't
yeah,
work.
well, hindsight is 2020. Second Life is still around, and one of the interesting parts about it is it's not losing users. It's simply plateaued. Since 2008, Second Life, which I worked there for 2 years, 2006 to 2008, there has been 1 million users every single month signing on. No more, no less. So Second Life found this really interesting set of users that have decided that is their interface, that is what they want part of their reality to look like, and they are dedicated to it. And the problem is, that is not growth. And not growth means not working in the Bay Area, especially when you've got funding rounds to pay back. So it's not dead. I would say it is dying, even though it has the same number of users because of flat growth and not making money. But yeah, we kind of learned that there was just too much setup for it. This is something that I talk about with user interfaces for sex toys too. If it's something that take, like, if you decide, holy shit, I need to masturbate right now, and you've got a toy that makes it wonderful but also takes 30 minutes to set up and then 15 minutes to wash, take down, and put away, you better really like that toy. Like, it has to trip something that is fetish level, or you're just not going to use it. We've actually seen multiple toys go away due to their setup and shutdown time. Second Life was the same way. You have to boot the client. You have to make sure all your graphics are going to render. You have to go to the place the other person is. You have to deal with the fact that the animations are going to collide and stuff. And they have apparently found 1 million users that are cool with that. So,
And they still have 1 million users.
yeah, but the thing is, these days, a lot of those problems were with you have to download a client, you have to run a program. Now we've got a bunch of the shit on the web. We've got Web 3D, we've got Web Audio. So there's actually a thing called Cloud Party, which is Second Life circa early 2005, late 2004. On the web, you just boot a browser and you fucking go. And it works surprisingly well. So we may see a resurgence of that, because it's taking out one of the major things, which was having to set up, get in world, make sure your computer runs and everything else. If it's just a web browser and a web page, that might be completely different. In terms of where toys were at that time, God,
Yeah, the conference. What was the conference that you gave your talk?
Oh, that was the Game Developers Conference. Yeah. We were doing a lot of work with Sex and Games at that time because of Hot Coffee and GTA, which was 2005-2006. I also ran a website 2005-2007 called MMORGY, M-M-O-R-G-Y, which was about sex and MMOs and online text worlds, because there had been some academic papers published on it, and there was, like, the Terra Nova blog, which was a whole bunch of academics that every so often would post something about sex, but no one had just concentrated on sex in, like, virtual environments. We were all still quoting the Rape in Cyberspace Julian Dibble article from 1993. So, ran that for a couple of years. Funny enough, kind of felt like I ran out of material. I'm sure there's a lot more now. So with what's happened in games since then, well,
there were a couple of interesting things last year at Ars Electronica, because we specialized on the games topic last year. But the interesting aspect is most of it is not really, there's, let's say, the focus at the moment is mostly, it's realism, I guess.
It's realism, and I mean, and most of the controversy is now not about sex, it's about gender. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we were way too future for that shit in 2006 when, like, it's now 2013, and oh my god, there's a girl playing a fucking video game. I mean, it's... So if we can't even deal with that, maybe, like, the book Brenda Braithwaite wrote and some of, like, my blog posts, which are now all moved over to Slashdong and stuff because I shut down the domains and whatnot... Like, those will come back into play, but it feels like we were too much too early at that time now. Yeah. And, like, now we've just got to go back and sort out the base shit. Yeah. So, or, well, today, I wouldn't say I'm too involved in that anymore, but yeah.
I mean, the reason why to start Ars Electronica in 2006, when we had the idea, was because there were a couple of things out there that were kind of interesting, because there was no real focus on sex and technology, but also on the politics behind it and having kind of like more like a critical discourse about the whole thing. There were things like even as early as the 70s and 80s when certain like niche groups were discussing all that kind of stuff. I mean, there was this pretty lame magazine called Future Sex. Has anyone ever seen a copy of
that? I've been trying so fucking hard to get issues of that, actually.
There
are some scanned.
Yeah. Content was kind of, I don't know.
I've got some issues of Mondo 2000 with ads for Future Sex in the back of them.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's the same thing. I mean, are you serious now? He's like this big singularitarian guy. I mean, he had actually a talk a couple of years ago at Ars Electronica about him being like, what's this new H+ magazine? Is this new thing? And I mean, singularitarians, like, they freak the shit out of me. I don't get it. I really don't get it. It's kind of like Christian teleology plus rich white dudes who fund it. It's really...
I haven't heard of Singularity University before a fucking man. But then again, I mean, I am so anti-techno-utopian these days, it's just not even funny. I mean, and... I have been in this shit for 20 years now. Like, that kid that you were talking about that gets raised by the net and gets to know that there's shit out there, I was him in 1990 fucking two with Usenet.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
And so, no, I know exactly that it can help, and I know that that is there, but I also know what those companies are doing. I have worked for those companies, and I work against those companies now. So, no, you're, like, anything that says, let's let Google hook up our sex bots, I'm probably not going to say yes to. But, to each their own, and I mean, that's, like, I am very techno-utopian, I would say that, like I said, I call myself the Evgeny Morozov of butt plugs, so let me regale you with 16,000 words on why the real touch sucks or something.
But the approach is totally okay, because we have to just, like, find what we can do with certain technologies without really worshipping them. I mean, that's the point. I mean, technology is around, and there's, like, no denying that we're doing stuff with them, but having a critical perspective. That's what I was always lacking when I started Monochrome in the early 90s, that most of that bullshit, see, Mondo 2000 and all that kind of stuff, was so incredibly technotriumphant in their approach. It wasn't even utopian. It's just like, we are the guys who know, and we tell you now what the future looks like. And the weird shit is that because they pretended to know what the future is, guys like, are you serious, yeah? Who doesn't know, yeah? that's why so many people got influenced by that tendency and by that vision, that suddenly, like, some of that shit actually came true with Google. I mean, Google is the perfect example of, like, a wet dream of a cyberpunk from the mid-1980s, really. And those guys, like, the Google guys, they grew up in that shit, and in a certain way, you still feel it. You still feel how they're dealing, what they're doing.
No one wants to remember the, like, fucked up dystopian ending. I mean, because that's, like, I kind of feel like I can say that I have basically lived, like, my cyberpunk fantasies from, like, the late 80s, early 90s, and whatever else. I've worked on self-driving cars. I've worked on virtual worlds. I've worked on internet butt plugs that hooked up to the self-driving car that you could drive through a virtual fucking world. I mean, it's, and at the end of the day, it's like, well, yes, there's some cool stuff that came out of it, but it's not, it's a solution still looking for a problem. I mean, and so
the problem is always the product side of that stuff, because if there is a company out there like looking for a specific thing in the market, of course they tap into the desires and wishes and beliefs of fellow humans and try to exploit it, of course. But that's, you know, like this, I mean, I don't want to get too destructive and too pessimistic about it and stuff, because I am a European leftist, and the first thing you have to criticize is that we are living in a capitalist system, and then I don't know where we would go now, like, talking about capitalism now for the next half an hour. So,
and we could all have some.
So the question is to me, like, let's ask it in that way. What's the temporary autonomous zone that sex and technology is still able to give us? What do you think?
Well, that's a tough one. Well, I mean, there are still spaces that exist on the net that have existed since before Mondo 2000 and will continue to exist, like kink-driven spaces and stuff. That was that's why I bristle against a lot of futurist talk about sex. It's like, no, that was actually happening when I was in grade school or whatever else. And that's the thing, is like, people will find their niche. And the question is, will they come out of it? It's not like this is a complete breakdown of things. There are people that have found really cool things. I mean, I've started social services that have ended up in people getting married and stuff.
Like me.
Hmm?
Like, I'm only married right now because I have fucking Facebook, so I will not complain about Facebook. But,
yeah. So, I mean, it's not like it's an all bad thing or anything like that. It's just, what's it involved with? Like, are you going to be, like, fucking in your cyber bed or whatever else, and all of a sudden, in between you and your partner comes up an ad for Taco Bell? I mean, it's... Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I did feel a little weird. I did walk in after the Google bed thing, but, seeing an image from Black Mirror up there, which, I mean, that's, with, I am a huge fan of Charlie Brooker, obviously, and, so that was like, it was just like, oh, geez, do we really want that?
We had this short debate about that, so
yeah, okay,
choosing,
yeah,
like an image, but it's visually, it's an interesting image, but the story that you're telling that specific episode of Black Mirror is, of course, highly dystopian, right?
So, going back to sex toys, which is kind of probably what I'm actually supposed to be talking about, weirdly enough, I haven't seen a lot of that in, like, we don't have, like, a Facebook of internet dildos yet. and now I'm waiting for the audience to just run out the door and start that startup. But I should got butt book or something. But most toy development right now does not really have that built in yet. There's no toy that I am aware of yet that has its own Facebook app. There are ones that are coming out with iPhone or Android apps, but nothing with Facebook, nothing with Foursquare, or Bedposter, or something like that, which is an interesting question. It's like, when does that happen? Mm-hmm. Most toys now are, there are ones that are doing good things. Like, for instance, with the sex worker thing, RealTouch now has created a cam girl market with machines that cam boys and girls and cam star can model and set their own prices and everything else and use hardware interaction. So there are some really cool market models coming out of that. And then there's also the question of new types of media that are coming out. For instance, Vibes, which is a Singaporean startup that has shown up to every single fucking startup competition in the past 2 years on the planet, because they are trying to kickstart funding for sex toys, basically. They want to be the first people who actually fund a sex toy onto the market via VC money. They're doing a really interesting thing where it's a vibrator for that you can wear in your underwear, and it syncs to stories as they are read. So think of it like Audible for your underwear. And so they're going to be selling, so they're attaching themselves to fan fiction, using the auditory channel, which so far I would say only audio-driven toys like the Audio and the Oh My Bod and the iBuzz have done, and that was just with music, which has personal context but not overall erotic context. And so they're taking fan fiction, which is just, once again, like I said, huge. I mean, that's why we have 50 Shades of Grey. It was fucking Twilight fan fiction before that. Attaching to that, using audio, and then putting it in a very discreet, well-made, safe-looking vibrator. And that's kind of cool. So,
yesterday there was a lot of discussion about, and also today, that the main problem at the moment is that there's so many people out there who have interesting, kinky ideas, they start projects, websites. The very moment they want to be paid for that, they have the problem that they have to go through, you know, like the problem with the credit cards, because Visa would not process them. So there was a big, there's still a debate going on, so how can you actually do something interesting if you're pretty much like blocked off of any kind of payment? Yeah, that's great. But I don't know. Well, I'm not sure. Well,
no, because there's a lie. Just because you can get paid in Bitcoin doesn't mean you can liquefy your Bitcoin. And if you can't liquefy your Bitcoin, then it's as good as your World of Warcraft dollars or whatever else.
So that stuff is interestingly like it always there's so many. I mean, then I had the feeling in 2006, 2007, there are a couple of interesting glass ceilings concerning sex and technology, yeah? But it seems that there are more and more glass ceilings appearing. It's not that they're disappearing. It's the more mainstream the stuff gets, and the more people talk about this stuff. I mean, here, like, Jay Leno's talking about an iPhone app for vibrators and stuff like that. So it's like, it's something that it seems that it hit the mainstream, but it's not clear if it's the mainstream market, or if there is a mainstream market for big companies who can afford it, but where's the niche market for that? So people know about that. People know about sex technology, but the glass ceilings are everywhere, and it's pretty hard to get through them.
I mean, that's part of, like, I gave Vibes a massive amount of shit when they started. Because they were like, oh, we're going to start teledildonics for men and women. It's for men and their wives. Like, that was their actual marketing. And I got so Bay Area on that shit. to the point of, like, actually going up to one of their people presenting at a booth. And I was like, could I put that in my butt? And they said, no. And I was like, well, could gay men use this? And they're like, no, it's not made for gay men. I'm like, well, fuck you. And then I kind of realized something. that made me come around, not specifically to that marketing tactic, but, I mean, personally, but I understand why they're doing it. You need comfort. More than anything, you need comfort. You need a... If you are provided with a shared context, and this is something that I'm just going to keep referencing the last talk since it's the only one I've seen this conference, I guess. But the dating, the dating thing was right.
Yeah.
Like, the dating thing was good because that's the way sex toy shops work, actually. There's a ton of large warehouses that all sell the same sex toys around the U.S. They're just basically suppliers. And there's a lot of people that... operate specifically on their brand. You could buy those toys anywhere, and they aren't really going for being like the Walmart of like the double-ended dildo or whatever else, but they know that they can sell because they can cover their certain demographic, be it race, be it gender, be it sexuality, whatever else. That's why there are so many little crappy but making money adult toy stores out there, is because you can brand on anything, and anything that you can use to make that experience more comfortable for someone will bring them to your business.
Yeah. I mean, the good side of an actual toy to sell is at least you can sell a toy. With kind of like the demise of the porn market, I mean, the porn market is collapsing. I mentioned that before today, that in the last 7 or 8 years, like seeing how like DVD, like the big wish of like the porn industry were thinking like, oh, Blu-ray will save us all. Of course it did not. So there is, in the actual content, like porn content, there is not a lot of money in there, especially if you're thinking big numbers for big companies, there's nothing to do there anymore. There's of course the niche market for small porn production, amateur porn, very specific porn production for very specific niche groups, yeah. But it seems that's also, you know, like who's paying for that, how much. Selling a product is always something you like. You sell a product, you have a product. Like, people in the meantime don't feel obliged to pay for content anymore, so it's there anyways. There's especially in porn.
Actually, this does bring up something interesting though, and anyone that is an actual content producer in the audience, if I am wrong in the next part of this, feel free to shout me down, because I'm making this up as I go. So you can actually wrap that back around and start looking at things like XTube, where, I mean, one of the things that we anti-tech utopians out here love to say is you are the product.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of people where their exhibitionism has become the product. Like, for XTube, I don't know if you can get paid for your own videos or not on there, but there is still, I mean, there is more than enough people uploading videos of themselves doing whatever.
So charging for that.
Yeah, it's like, you could charge for that, and that might make it very interesting. Well, that's what Make Love Not Porn is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So Make Love Not Porn allows couples, or does anyone know if Make Love Not Porn does solo? Guess not. Okay. So the way that I know it, at least, Make Love Not Porn allows couples to make porn and sell their, or make erotic content, because it's called Make Love Not Porn, but these are actual real-life couples that can talk about both their relationship and then post erotic content of themselves and charge for it and create. It's an app store for your own erotic content. Awesome. But then there's also just giving it away for free, though. I mean, that's the thing, is that's a fetish. Or it can be a fetish, of, like, just complete non-profit exhibitionism is the best term I can come up with, but that sounds awful weird. So, yeah, and then, yeah, there's the Tumblr question, too, of hyper-specialization. I mean, because that's the thing, is, like, well, there's...
I heard that Christoph Pettis talked about that in the keynote, and he said, like, now with Yahoo, like, Tumblr not belonging to Yahoo, and Tumblr being one of the biggest, pretty much, like, porn databases online, the question is, like, how Yahoo will deal with that, because they are very family-oriented, and so what will happen to the wonderful Napster of porn that is Tumblr?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, so far Yahoo says they're not going to touch it.
Okay.
And I actually do think it would. There would be a very interesting impact on Yahoo's stock price if that happened, and that's something that a lot of people are watching because Marissa Mayer's ass is on that. So, in terms of just straight-up tech culture, I don't think they're going to touch it. I mean, I think they just want to own the kids, and the fact that the kids are masturbating to the thing that they want to own the kids for, whatever. So, yeah, it's that's going to be an interesting play between money and content.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like Tumblr is really, they're so incredibly specific to the blog.
It is breathtaking. It is absolutely fantastic.
Anyway, there's this one, it's one of my favorites, is the one with jiggling, zoomed in hentai boobs. There's like one, it's almost like a Kafkaesque nightmare. You scroll through the never-ending flow of GIFs of wiggling hentai boobs, and it's going on. It's like the ocean. It's really relaxing.
It's just amazing the amount of them too. It's like the testament to like the human drive to really fucking classify everything.
Well, I mean, porn. When I grew up, yeah, it was called porn. Yes. In the meantime, the way that we deal with porn is like the stuff is online. Like, who still has a porn collection? Like, really, like DVDs or even on hard drives, a collection of images or videos. And who is just like, when I want to see porn, I go to YouPorn and just like stream it. Who's doing that? Also, both. Okay. Most young people I talk to, like people under 20, find it absurd that there is a collection of porn on your hard drive. Why would you do that? You have access to porn wherever you want to, so just like bump. And it's getting boring watching the same porn over and over again anyways. And if necessary, just like save the URL.
That's a good reason. But the thing is too about going to find porn is you're going to usually... Porn used to be that, like, you didn't get a community with your hustler that you bought at the bookstore with, like, the all-black plastic cover. Now, with porn, there's usually a comment thread, or there's usually, like, a list of people that also liked it and stuff. So, with whatever you're looking for, you know you're also probably getting a list of recommendations of other things to look for.
I mean, in the meantime, for most people, the internet is kind of like Facebook is getting synonymous for internet. So it's just, you know, but that's not completely true, I know, because there's certain demographics use different online forums. For example, I've heard that the really youngsters, they're all on YouTube.
Youngsters are for communication. There's also geographic borders. Live Journal is still huge in Russia.
Yeah, Orkut actually still big in Brazil.
Orkut is still big in Brazil. Friendster, I think Indonesia.
Friendster exists?
Yes, in Indonesia.
The lost civilization is there? In Indonesia, really?
There's geographic lines too. Facebook has a billion users, but
for example, Facebook is pretty harsh concerning like graphic content and stuff like that. I mean, I'm trying to test it from every now and then. Most of the time, it's pretty okay. But I mean, for the old saying that you have to be able to be able to access porn through your main means of communication. if the main means of communication for many people, for example, is Facebook, which is kind of harsh on porn, is there a future for Facebook? Is there a future for Facebook? Is there
harsh on porn?
Anything that is run by corporations who have an interesting family value set in their TOS? I don't know.
Where does a family value set matter? I mean, that's like, if we go back to 2006 again, Habbo Hotel, Babboing. I mean, kids were text fucking for couches. And they came up with their own language for it. You will always come up with your own colloquialisms to get across the message you want if you only have a perceived single line of communication. Yeah. And so we will just continue to see new and interesting languages and transferences of sex in odd places. I mean, like, the The one that has been my favorite so far, it's not even sex, but it's just so fucking weird, is there's sets of preteens that have been role-playing the Warrior Cats book series in the reviews of books sold on Barnes & Noble's website. So it's like, the thing is, that's partially because that's a site they can get to at school. So it is their single line of communication, and there's like these authors are like, why the fuck is Brambo Pelt talking to me like about like a +4 attack in my book review? But just the sheer ingenuity of, well, I can go to this book site because it's about books, and so I can do it at school, so I can do it at all. There you fucking go.
I mean, like the never-ending pleasure of subversion. I know that exactly. Yeah. The question is like, if a company model like Facebook or whatever else's company model it is based on like sheer numbers and many of them, then that's where the statistic fucks the whole thing. It's like, of course, there will be the kids who will be using it for porn. Everyone will use it for sex because there's no way stopping basic human desires and needs and kinks with a TOS. That's not happening, yeah?
That's well,
not
that's, going I mean, that's where
it can make it hard.
That's where the privacy issues come up, though, is because that's, okay, so there's 1 billion people on Facebook, and you can't post public illicit content, for whatever that may be, on Facebook. Fine, you go to private messages. That means the second their private messages system dies, oh shit. That's like, people will also find what perceived privacy is and what they think privacy is, and they come to trust that privacy. Even though no one actually told them, no, this shit's actually private. There's no engineer that's going, no, actually, that's not going to break for you. You can totally do that. I mean, we could go way out into space and talk about, well, shit, even our cryptography isn't private now with all this NSA stuff, but that's just a slippery slope to another non-sex toy-filled conversation. So, so there's perceived privacy in services, too, that you kind of have to figure out or balance, and that's certainly an issue. So, since I get to ask a question, please, I get to ask a question. So, what do you see as the, I mean, you've been running this for 6 years now, what's the, Jesus Christ, we're old. What do you see as the biggest change between then and now, just in the conference as a whole, be it attendees, talks, whatever else?
It's interesting to see that there are recurring topics. There are certain things that just like pop up again and again and again in different forms. For example, Lex's talk, and I actually really liked it, just because I have seen talks like Lex's talk a couple of times before, but they're always a little bit different. It's almost like that the Techno-Utopian talk in 2007 had a different like texture, a different feel than the one in 2013.
Oh, completely. I mean, that's like looking at Mondo 2000 right now. Like, I guess I love Mondo 2000 to death, and I, like, there's part of me that kind of wishes we could have that back, because today it seems so cartoony.
Yeah,
it's just like, oh my god, you just want to squeeze 1993 and tie it up.
I really liked it. I always felt it a little bit strange. That's why the whole monochrome thing happened. But, for example, I always had this, they were always talking about body modifications. And I was like, oh, body modification, what does that mean? Yeah? And I was always thinking, like, are you serious? Like, just, if you talk about body modifications all the time, first, go to a dentist. The first thing, yeah, really. You go, yeah. And am I bad now? No. The wonderful aspect about the whole like cyberpunk 1980s aspect is that, and people forget that it's all about high tech and low life, and the low life aspect kind of got ignored completely. So all those people growing up reading all like the Bruce Sterling actually was pretty utopian in some parts. So it's not that Bruce Sterling is kind of like a hard, but I mean, William Gibson didn't write Neuromancer because he wanted to Neuromancer to happen. He wrote it because he wanted to criticize like this like rampant 1980s Reaganomics, Thatcherism, hardcore neoliberal capitalism thing, and wrapping it into an interesting new future society about data communication, because that was just like growing there. I mean, William Gibson wrote Neuromancer on a typewriter. He didn't know anything about computers. That's why Neuromancer is actually a good book, because he just made some shit up and didn't understand what's actually possible, which makes him a visionary in a certain sense. Yeah, the main problem, really, as mentioned before, is people who grew up reading that and trying to make it happen, but kind of like completely ignoring that it was a dystopia. It wasn't. It was a cool dystopia, but it was a dystopia. And I mean, it took a Dutch filmmaker called Verhoeven to make one of the best movies of the 1980s, RoboCop, just to stick the finger out and say, like, America, do you really want to end like this?
And now
we're like, Detroit is fucking bankrupt. Huh? It's everything besides RoboCop.
And we're putting
it's
a statue of RoboCop there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, we're crowdfunding RoboCop into it to go, you know what, let's just crown that.
What I really like, yes. So, but going back to your question, so what changed in the last 7 years is that there is really more political debate about that stuff. I have the feeling that like 10 years ago, when Ars Electronica started, 7 years ago, there was still the feeling of like sex and tech. Oh wow, I never thought about that. And in the meantime, there is actually like really interesting discourse also on a political level about that kind of stuff. So the whole debate about gender and how gender is changing and all that kind of stuff, that got really reignited, I have to say. Although there is the Cyber Manifest and all that stuff pretty early, and I came to kind of like... I kind of like and hate the Cyber Manifesto and this... Judith Butler... Yes and no, yeah? But I'll stop there, yes? But that's actually being tested now, and I really like that. I really like that there's so many combining it with the emergence of the hackerspaces movement that pretty much like had the Cambrian explosion in 2007. That was around the same time that Ars Electronica started. And I think the convergence of like more political activists going into technology and sex technology, more tinkering going out there, people being laid off who have bad tech jobs because they got kicked out in 2008 or 2009 when the companies went bankrupt after the crash. More people went out there and started like thinking of like, is this really I'm having to look for a new job now. Is this really the future I want at Google? Is it really the future I want at HP or whatever it is? And just like started tinkering around and building things. So there's an interesting convergence of the political scene and the DIY scene, I have to say. I could also criticize many of that aspects, because just because you're a DIY doesn't mean you are a do-gooder. Just doesn't work. Your Arduino is made of the same material, as I said before, that is the iPhone. So it's dug up by some poor guys in the middle of fucking Congo, and those guys die for your fucking Arduinos, yeah? But the question is, like, how do we really escape that cycle? So how can we really do something, change something, make something, without stepping in the dog shit of material all the time? But I guess... I'll bounce that question back to you.
Okay, well, working on my Nobel Prize here now.
It's really the open hardware thing. How can we really have hardware? How can we really do things? How can we use a sex toy without having like the guilt fuck with poor people in China who are being exploited by that stuff being produced in China? I mean, that was the whole idea of the screw the system, Ars Electronica, about sex and tax and politics. But I mean, there is no immediate answer to that, because we're just like we're too far into what we call capitalism to really see a light.
You've stuck capitalism too far in, is what you're saying.
Oh yes, oh yeah. Like, you know, it's commodity fetishism, you know?
No, that's an interesting question. I mean, how do we have, like, clean tech usually still revolves around, like, it's energy production, but there's still the boards and stuff in the middle and everything else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one problem at a time. That was the thing. Like, going back to what you're talking about the localization of the subject. When we were talking, like, 2007, yeah, it was all like, we need sex in games. Like, there's no sex in games because we're not adults and we all act like kids, and there needs to be sex in games. And now it's like, there's no sex in games, and there's hardly any women in games, and now people are getting death threats for saying there should be. No, we know why there's not sex in games now. So there's a constant like, once again, hindsight 2020 and constant relearning of the naivete. I mean, that's why I like Mondo 2000, is because it's like, oh, it's adorable and naive, and if only they knew, but they didn't, and that's what allowed this to happen. And this comes up in all sorts of ways, too. I think, like, one of my favorite ways that I found out about it lately, when I was in Norway, I actually got to meet Stahl Stensley, who is an amazing body artist, huge influence on my work, because he was doing, like, cyber S&M stuff.
He's high on the list for, like, an artist from the life.
Oh, damn, fuck it, right.
Yes, yeah. We have to get him over.
Yeah. So, anyways, he actually did a project a few years ago called Artgasm, which all it is he found a Swedish medical company that creates a vibrator for inducing ejaculation in male spinal patients. So if they've lost all feeling, but they still like to procreate, that's how they get the sperm out. But it works on everyone. And so the whole project is, okay, like, we've always taught, I mean, if you look at, like, the orgasmatron and sleeper and everything else, there's this view of, if I could just jizz, then fuck yeah, let's do it. You don't want to do that.
There's this wonderful film by Douglas Trumbull, who was the guy who also did Silent Running, by the way, one of the first eco-science fiction films of all times, and he did the special effects for 2001, yeah? And he did a film in 1982 called Brainstorm, with Christopher Walken, actually, as the really nice, good scientist who develops a system that records your thoughts, pretty much, and your brain waves and your thoughts. So pretty much a little bit like that Catherine Bigelow film a couple of years later. Strange Days, yes, but way earlier than that. And the thing is, like, they had big tapes. It was really nice. It was big tape, lots of it, and there's this one scene where this one guy almost kills himself because he takes duct tape or some kind of tape, and he records an orgasm and makes a tape loop, and watches the tape loop over again, like for like 24 hours or something like that, and then they discover him just like in this like never-ending state of like almost being killed by orgasm. So, and that was really hot, I have to say.
No,
that was in 1982.
Yeah, so the interesting part about
it's real.
Yeah, well, with orgasm,
so it could happen, like there's a button and you press the button and you.
Yeah,
an orgasm.
You don't want to do that. You really don't want to fucking do that. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you don't need to have that button and press it multiple times in orgasm. It could be that once does it to you, because the thing that they discovered, and the whole reason it became, like, an art project, and, like, they actually took it to Slovenia and Serbia and other places where people will sign a piece of paper, and that's okay to have them do this. I don't think they're going to be touring this one in the U.S. anytime soon. But yeah, so you can experience it, and you learn that it feels like being violated in ways that you will never experience otherwise. Because the whole thing about sex, the whole reason that we're like, oh, it's all in the mind and everything, is because if your mind's not set up for it, it's really fucked up. Like, the muscle contractions that happen for ejaculation and the way the body works, if you try to just do ejaculation without the heart rate, the breathing rate, and everything else being at the right level, no, you can cause yourself a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason it works for
like the hormonal like buildup.
Exactly. Like, there is a reason we have the sex before the jizzing, and it's so we don't die when we do. So the whole project is about like, well, I can make you come right now, and that sounds great, and then you do it. It's like, never again. He said he tried it once, and he will never, ever do it again. It is really, really violating. So it seems like what's happening is we come up with this really awesome idea, and we're like, yes, we need that. That's awesome. And we get things like Mondo 2000, we get things like the Orgasmatron, we get all sorts of future ideas. And then 10 years later, things turn around, and we go, oh, shit, that was adorable.
I'm astounded by many things that really happened, because there's of course a lot of debate about what should happen and what could happen, and there's lots of visions out there. And sometimes, like I get emails by guys like who, for example, there's this one guy from New York City. He is now trying for a couple of years to grow a specific kind of fungus on his penis, because that when he gets an erection, that specific kind of brittleness that, I don't know, he tried to explain to me, but he's really doing that, and I was like, fuck yeah. I mean, if you really get in, like, if you really like that, do it, yes? But, I mean, you wouldn't believe how much energy and intensity is out there when people try to do interesting things to themselves that are kinks to them. You're like, and if it's a weird South African fungus growing on your penis.
In the end, too, I mean, the question is, are we trying, like, it feels like a lot of talk about sex tech and everything else is very long tail, to bring a nice tech economics term into it, where, because that's the thing with, like, Singularity University and stuff, too, where it's like, you're supposed to create an idea that will affect a billion people in 10 years, but will probably leave you, completely destitute for the next 5. And so we're always looking 10 years out, which matches perfectly with that, oh, that was adorable thing that I just said.
Yeah.
We're always starry-eyed about the future, and if we weren't, then we would all be little black fucking rain clouds like me. I'd like to see some variety in the world. There is a question, too, though, of how far forward can we go with sex? I mean, that's always been the fun part of ours for me, is it's just like, fuck it, let's just do whatever. Bringing the spectacle of reality into it is difficult and boring sometimes, but it seems like in the end, there are a lot of questions of what can we be doing right now, but the problem is most of the answers to those come from 30 years ago. So it's like we're either way too old or looking way too far ahead. Is there any, like, good answer for the now? I have no fucking idea.
I guess it's also about, like, bringing the right people together. I think that's always an interesting aspect of trying to solve the dilemma of
I feel like my contribution to that that problem now is the fact that, like, I have made sure all the fucking archives of my blogs work. That's why I say that Slashdong is my notebook now, because I've been doing this for 9 years, and that's not a spectacularly long time, especially when, I mean, the first Teledildonics toys came out in 1995, the first vibrators came out 2 centuries ago now, it's a fairly small speck of time, but we need more centralized knowledge archives of here's what worked, here's what hasn't, and here's why. Otherwise, I mean, I can certainly see someone pulling yet another JoJo where it's like, of course users want to program their sex toy. And no one needs that lesson. And there might be a newer and better way of doing it, but we want to make sure we don't, like, sex toys have, up until lately, simply allowed the repeat of mistakes because people were too fucking scared to ask what was different.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we saw, like, the big old nasty, horrible plastic toxic dildos forever, because it's not like you're gonna ask, well, wait, is that okay? And I mean, and then the wonderful thing is about, like, the Center for Sex and Culture and Good Vibes and Babes in Toyland and all these other places that have popped up, like, no, you needed to be safe. And now, I mean, one of the biggest things about sex toys right now with Jimmy Jane and Crave and a few of these other places is they're trying to make them, let's not go with Jimmy Jane and Crave like that. Let's go with, like, Lilo and some of the other companies that are doing more ergonomic, non-gigantic penis toys. Like, they're trying to make it, they're trying to plan for now of, I don't want it to look like it's going to eat me unless you're into being eaten or whatever. But, and then there's the question of where could it go wrong? And the way that I see that is, and this could just be a personal thing that's getting in the way, but I've read interviews with both the guy from Jimmy Jane and the guy from Crave, and yes, I said guy, because they're guys, and they're white, both saying that they want to be the Steve Jobs of sex toys. There is so much fucked up in that phrase, and that's why I posted on Twitter earlier this week.
Okay, the question would be, who's the Wozniak?
I was about to say, I posted on Twitter earlier this week, I hope I'm the Woz of sex toys. And then someone replied to me with something that was like, no, be the Engelbart of sex toys. And
Engelbart?
Yes!
Oh, adorable! The Engelbart, yes.
But yes, I mean, like, we're dividing between what is ergonomically usable and safe, and which is cool, like, that's really, like, sex toys that fit all body forms, that's a really neat bioengineering feat, but then there's also the sex toys luxury brand. That's a little fucked, because that means that luxury becomes the comforting factor, and
yeah, that
did I just back myself into a talk about privilege?
Yeah.
Who the fuck am I?
No!
Area! But, yeah, no, it's, because there's, I mean, God, I think, like, the weirdest sex toy I've seen, and I see some weird sex toys, believe me, was the 24-karat gold vibrator that also doubled as a 16-gig USB drive.
Only 16, yes.
This was a couple of years ago, but yeah, it was a combination.
Why not 69?
Oh, Lord. So the combination of, like, luxury and technical usage in sex, it's like, okay, well, the technical usage in sex is like, okay, well, if my Swiss Army knife had a dildo, okay.
Be careful.
But yeah, but then it's like the 24-karat gold too, where it's like, okay, so both tech and sex are luxury, and oh, Jesus fucking Christ. So yeah, I don't know. That's kind of like the battlefield that's brewing right now of, can you be comfortable without the comfort being a luxury?
Yeah.
And then
the interesting thing is, like, I turn on, I don't know, like Jerry Springer, something like that, like afternoon talk shows, like the most transgressive shit happening there. That, I mean, the stuff that I was jerking off to when I was like 12 or something like that, that's now on Jerry Springer, you know, it's just like they're just talking about that kind of stuff, you know, oh, it's happening all the time. But it doesn't mean that that the general population is any closer to A, really doing this, or B, that is kind of like changing anything, like just because society is, there is a Jerry Springer doesn't mean that there are more Jerry Springers out there, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a huge problem, and I mean, especially when you get into, like, building sex toys, it's like, okay, so you want to build the sex toy that people will use for the rest of their lives, because that, like, and this is coming from a complete business perspective here, you want to use the, like, the toy that, like, that is the toy, but you have to build for people in, like, it's only probably okay to build for people that are in their 30s, because in your 20s, you're supposed to be having sex with everyone because you're young and beautiful and in your 20s. And when you're younger than 20, then you're a child, and if you're building sex toys for a child, then what the fuck are you doing? So we've got this really weird demographic that we're trying, and that's why we get, like, the adult contemporary of the dildo. Like, adult contemporary music of dildos, I mean, or something like that, where it's like, okay, well,
rated PG.
Yeah, and it's hard to get interesting interfaces and stuff, but you can't really go, well, what are the kids doing with the tumblers? Let's put that butt plug, because multiple issues that don't really bear listing. So, yeah, it's difficult. I mean, that's one of the things that I've tried to, I have had many a utopian dream around Slashdot. Like, there was a long time, I defended the fuck out of the Zhizhou, and I was like, oh my god, you can program your sex toy, everyone's gonna want to program their sex toy, look, you just point, like, you point and click and drag, and, like, that was my everyone needs to learn to code moment. And I am so the fuck over that now. because, No, you don't. You have this wonderful body that we aren't fucking harnessing at all. Like that's the thing, is about quantified self. Someone's like, oh, look at how many steps I took. And it's like, yeah, but you don't really, like, talk about how many strokes you took or something like that. And we've got all sorts of really cool things we can do with biometrics and how you feel. And that's, like, that's that wonderful thing that Artgasm shows, is it's, like, that whole point between you deciding you want to get off and you wanting to get off is where my interesting engineering problem is. And it, so if you truncate that, well then fuck you, because I have no more fun to be had. But also, like, there's so many cool things to be done with biometrics, and I did a talk about this in, what, 2008, 2009, one of the, like, 2009. I did an hour-long Ars talk about it, like, here's how you could use EEGs and Pulse and GSR and everything else and do sensor fusion on this shit and make an amazing toy, and it's incredibly fucking difficult, don't get me wrong. Because if you want to make it for the mainstream, everyone's bodies are different. I don't know if you knew that. But we now have big data, which then leaves us right back into our privacy issue of, what if your sex toy uploaded how you reacted just so that everyone else could have a better orgasm? But...
Reminds me of the term about Gloria Mould, yes.
Yes, yes.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And nobody will know what it is.
Yeah, so, like, there's really cool things we could do with biometrics that would help everyone, but, yeah, right now it's all about the easy sell, which is luxury.
Yeah.
So...
There's one idea that I still like, and I probably at some point should do it. I think it came up as early as 2009 or something like that. It was the idea of fuckable art. Like, imagine you have, like, a gallery, and there is an object in it, and it's designed to be fucked.
Actually, I've been thinking about, like...
And I still have
it. That's a really
just
interesting,
like,
idea.
Like, cuddling with arts and making
yeah,
art,
like,
and fucking art and whatever. Is, like,
I mean, how many times have you guys gone to a museum and desperately wanted to rub yourself against a painting?
Oh, totally.
Okay, and someone else other than Maggie raised their hand. Thank you. But yeah, it's I did a talk at a virtual worlds conference at Stanford about this, actually. I'd gotten so pissed off from the day of watching everyone talk about how they were making their own virtual world and they were all going to be interoperable and they all looked exactly the fucking same. And no one was talking about, like, adding new senses or anything else. And so I did this whole talk about, like, I am in the Louvre and I really need to fucking touch the Mona Lisa. What can I do in tech and in virtual worlds to make this happen?
You have haptics. Your kink is haptics, isn't it? Really?
It's one of my many. And that's my no-no zone, to be honest. But anyways,
that's a no-no, and there's a no.
It's like, it's... Fuckable art would be interesting, or feelable art. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, we don't have to go all the way to fuck. We can just go, can I just touch it or something? I like that idea. I approve of that.
Okay, so we are pretty much at the end of our small little rant, but there's still time for, like, one, two, or three questions, I guess. So, yeah, please step ahead. Of course.
Apparently I'm the one who's, like, notorious for wanting to hump art, so thank you. Thank you for that. This is, I guess, more of an observation, but especially hearing the cantankerousness, make love, not porn was mentioned, and I've had a pretty knee-jerk reaction every time people tell me about make love, not porn, because it's something that I've seen a lot of my peers do for a really long time without any venture capital, and then people come to me and they're like, have you heard of make love, not porn, where people are challenging the industry? And it's going to be a new innovative website, and it's going to change things, because right now people are looking at porn as sex ed, and this is going to be, like, educational porn that's really hot, and I guess my frustration is that people are looking to turn porn into the liberation tool, the education tool, rather than actually taking accountability for the fact that we need to alter our education system.
Yeah.
We need to stop trying to make the sex tech answer the failings in society. And I think when we look at the sexual utopia, we have this whole, like, here's the product, this will change things, and we forget that the people who made the product are still the people who made the product, they came from that context. So I guess in many ways, are you going to point out the gap between the tech and where we are as a society in terms of what we want to do with it? And where do you kind of wrap around to change people's ideas to broaden their horizons with what they could do with tech, rather than looking at the tech as the end result or the tech as the thing that will save the day rather than people using tech to save the day?
Okay. So that's a really interesting point, especially with Make Love Not Porn and the way that it, like, you gave it context there, because that really points out that Make Love Not Porn realized that amateur couples that want to do porn didn't have a brand yet. And when you can take a big enough niche, especially with the media impact of porn, and make a brand around it, and that's the thing, is it's like, what if filming yourself became that, well, have you Make Love Not Porn lately? Just like, have you Googled lately or something like that? That's like, I mean, that's like what I was kind of hearing from your view there, and that becomes to the much bigger question of, can we build this shit without a brand? Like, can we build any, like, and this is like way pulling out from sex and tech to just tech, and what you were mentioning, I feel kind of builds into the whole solutionism idea, which I don't want to get into like actual Morozov stuff, because that's a minefield, but I do like the idea of solutionism and tech being that solution to everything, that it didn't need a solution in the first place, or needed a different solution, or didn't have a solution because it's really fucking hard and you can't program your way out of it. And that's where a lot of my grumpy comes from, and I can feel the grumpy in you too, so. But yeah, it's,
But be clear, grumpy is already trademarked by the cat, yes, so. Really?
So, but I don't know, like, how do we solve big tech without a brand? I mean, that was kind of how the internet started, and then people realized you can make money off of it, and you want to be able to have that money funnel into a certain symbol or thing that people can easily repeat and transfer. Thank you very much, memes. And so, as goes searches, so goes sex.
Well, the open source thing doesn't really completely work, because it's not about factual capital, but then it's social capital, and we have to...
I can give a whole other hour on...
Yeah, so that doesn't really work. So, like, like open source is not saving the day at that point, as far as I can tell.
You can do it, but it is very difficult, and very few projects do. I mean, there are open source mascots that are out there, or open source brands that are out there that have the brand recognition, but they number in the under tens.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, follow-up to Amanda's comment and question, the person who started Make Love Not Porn, she actually gave a talk about it at TED, it's recorded, so it's like basically telling the whole world, basically. And when she's in front of this crowd, telling people in Ukraine and the whole world through the video, she says, this is a woman who's in her 50s, or roughly 50 at the time, and she says, she dates younger men, women in her 20s, and when she dates younger men, she has sex with them. She's saying that in front of everybody. And then she's like, all the different problems that she has, becomes they expect certain things to be a routine part of sex, like ejaculation on the face, for example.
Recontextualization of stuff, yeah.
And the other people who say not that particular topic, but something similar, like the author Nina Wolf, she was at a liberal Eastern college giving a talk, and one of the health counselors asked her a question about steep rise in annual fissures among women at that college. Now, annual fissures is something that happens to a lot of people, but it's actually because your lung fiber or lung water or something like that. It's about like 350 people, according to Wikipedia. And so it's my hobby, right? It's my bias, specifically around the world, because it's normally equally balanced between men and women. It's related to sexual activity, and it's because not only do men and women expect sex to be normal, they don't know all the steps about how you bring up a woman and, you know, to do that. And the men there, they sort of also expect it to be normal, and so they don't know how to say no. And so that's really the purpose of Make Love Not Porn, is sort of guidance, I think.
Yeah, no, there's...
I don't mean we need it over time, but okay. Line didn't work. It's 7:40.
Oh, okay, so I will answer this quickly.
We'll wrap it up, okay?
Yeah, so I mean, I am honestly not the person you want to be asking about content creation. I am, at my core, an engineer. I have been an engineer for years. I will continue to be an engineer. I cannot say that I know much of anything about content creation. The question becomes, like, how do we fix these things without rising up around a brand or something? Because I completely agree. Like, if you learn how to fuck from Max Hardcore, then you may have some problems with real people. So Make Love Not Porn, the guys that are watching that stuff, are they going to watch Make Love Not Porn? The women that are having problems knowing how any of this works, do they know the porn existed at all? I mean, there's lots of questions. And honestly, like, I feel a little bit derailed on this because I really don't have a lot of answers on that side. Yeah, it's a hard problem, and I'm just going to smile and nod and say it's a hard problem. So, yeah,
I guess we have to...
Yeah, we need to wrap up.
Now, so I set my fucking alarm, and it didn't go off.
So, sex is difficult, don't do it.
Kyle, thanks.